Hello, everybody, and welcome to an extended free preview of our What a Cartoon Movie, all about The Lion King 2. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, and I just bought the Nuka Lazy Lion NFT on the market, and I'm going to sell it soon. It's only going up in value after we do this podcast. Who's here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and one of these days I'll learn how to pronounce Timon.
Exactly.
Timon.
We're all learning. Yeah. It's a learning and growing experience. And yes, welcome to this extended free preview of our look at The Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. And of course, we're going to be talking about the 1998 direct-to-video sequel that 15 million people bought. Wow. And you probably have seen it in your lifetime if you were born, say, after 1990, I'm guessing.
So many VHS copies just littering the landfill of the world, or still sitting dust-covered in people's entertainment centers after long after their children have moved away.
We're going to be talking about the roots of the movie, of course, in this free preview, how it kind of originated before the first movie even came out. That's how big the video market was. But if you want to hear the entire thing, which includes a blow-by-blow description, commentary on the movie with all kinds of clips of stuff that you know and love us for, please go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. And when you do, you get access to the rest of this podcast and also access to the entire What a Cartoon Movie catalog that stretches back now more than 3 years.
Yeah.
We started doing it in November of 2018, every month covering a movie, between 3 to 5 hours of podcast material per month. So that adds up to a lot of podcasts that you haven't heard. If you like what we do, and if you sign up for the $10 level, you also get the $5 rewards at the same time. And that includes all of our limited miniseries. What's going on there, Henry, the $5 level?
Oh, man. Well, we just finished our Blabbing About Batman, the Animated Series miniseries that covered our 10 favorite episodes of Batman. We did that all up to the end of 2021. And each month now, you get to hear us do a new episode of Talking Futurama, or Talking of the Hill, where we're going through both of those series just like we do on The Simpsons, a new one each month. And when you get that $10 level for all the $5 stuff, you get the back catalog of over 100 exclusive miniseries podcasts on there of us covering Futurama, King of the Hill, Batman, Mission Hill, and The Critic. It's all there at that $5 level. And when you go to that $10 level, you get to hear this Lion King podcast, and you also, for example, get to hear our one we did for the first Lion King back last year, and a ton of other Disney stuff, like we did the first Disney direct-to-video sequel, Return of Jafar, as well. That's just part of the giant catalog you get. You see it all when you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
Thanks for listening to this brief little promotion here. Now we'll let you get to our exploration of the year 1998, when Andy Dick was the brightest star in the Hollywood sky.
What's a way?
So yeah, they're making a lot of this, and everyone knows, like, well, these aren't as good as the movies, right? The movies that we go out and see. But for this one, they really had the intent of, let's make this look like a real movie, which they would rarely ever do with these productions. Maybe it happened two more times. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time they ever said, damn it, this cannot just be TV animation that you buy on a tape. It's got to look like The Lion King.
So it sounds like somebody there had a level of pride of like, guys, we can't just do a TV episode level quality and call it The Lion King. It's that depreciates the brand. I mean, too, it was their most prestigious brand, I suppose, too.
Yeah. So yeah, the question is, why a Lion King sequel? The answer should be obvious. My question was rhetorical. No one out there is asking that. But we talk about this plenty in our August 2021 What a Cartoon Movie. But the movie was such a financial hit. Disney was chasing that same high until Frozen. They were like, we got to make another one of these. Nothing would top Lion King until Frozen came along for them.
And that's with inflation helping out that number too. Yeah, it's crazy to think they never topped it again with Lion King. I mean, it was just, like we said in that podcast, it was, I think, a confluence of, the wave crested there. It hit every possible thing it could, even though it was all looked on as the lesser movie to Pocahontas when everybody was working on it.
And I want to say this on the podcast, because I hear this all the time. I talked about this on the Hunchback podcast, too, where Lion King made like $1 billion, right? But there was no truly flop movie for Disney until after, like, 1999. Like, We talked about it on Hunchback, but Hunchback was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Hercules, huge hit. Pocahontas made tons of money. Nothing was a flop. Maybe in Disney's eyes, things were flops compared to Lion King. But it's weird to still hear on podcasts like, oh, of course, Pocahontas was a big bomb for Disney. Mm. Look at the number. Just look at the numbers. They're not hard to find. It just bugs me. It's this weird, like, pop, like, this conventional wisdom that's not true.
No, I hate hearing that repeated just ad nauseum on podcasts as well. I mean, comparatively, it's like, you know, the silver medal to the, well, honestly, Lion King's like the platinum medal because it could also be merchandised way more successfully than Hunchback or Pocahontas could. And so because of that, like, it's money amount and its soundtrack sold better. All the other sectors like sold better. But yeah. There was never they hardly unprofitable were those films.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just set off by a video that I sat down to watch and was excited to watch. But in the intro, the guy was like, oh, Disney made hit after hit after hit. Then, of course, Pocahontas and Hunchback and hit after hit. Just like, no, Hunchback made more than Hercules.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm out there shouting in the streets and about to be arrested because I care so much about these numbers. But yeah, these were big hits. So yeah, Lion King, huge hit. So also huge hit on video. So Lion King on video, it's the highest selling VHS tape of all time. 32 million copies, like $500 million of just VHS profits alone.
My God, man, that is crazy.
Everybody's got the Lion King clamshell. Like the clamshell for Disney, the VHS clamshell is like the real estate of the 90s living room. Like you'll see those in every home. It's like they establish like this is a facet of your home, these clamshell collections.
If you're a child of the 90s, you can just instantly imagine a little squeak that makes when you open it up to hear the plastic squeaking against itself.
And that's why they sell keychains of the clamshell cases at Disneyland and like notebooks with the clamshell covers on them.
It's sad they couldn't really extend that to like DVDs or Blu-rays or other physical media after that, because
I guess the steel box is today's clamshell.
I guess so, yeah. But everybody does that. It was like Disney, as a kid, I remember other VHS copies of kid stuff were also in big clamshells. Like they did kind of try to copy it, but Disney's did feel special or unique to themselves. Yeah.
But yeah, so if you made a Lion King sequel on VHS only, it was just like, I'm going to print money today. Here's I bought my license to print money. I'm going to the money factory and making as much as I want. That's what this was.
If Michael Eisner had said, we are not doing a video sequel to Lion King, he would have been executed in the room right there for insanity.
As an example, Jeffrey Katzenberg would have picked up his head and like danced around with it. But okay, so this may sound shocking to you, Henry, but in my research, so number one out there, folks, there is nothing on this movie online. What makes research even harder is that there is an upcoming Lion King 2.
Right.
The Mufasa prequel, because, of course, the Lion King CGI movie from 2019 is the seventh highest grossing movie of all time.
Yep.
It beat the original animated movie. There's something, we should have known COVID was coming. That was the premonition. Something is wrong.
The world had to respond to that. No, I get by the same metric I just said, they would be insane not to make a Lion King live action sequel for that same reason. But it so depresses me. And all they've got, it's just like it. Honestly, to me, whenever I read about that Lion King 2 live action one, I get the feeling of Han Solo, the Solo movie. Yeah. Just like, oh yeah, you have tiny little things of like, well, how did Scar get his scar? We're going to finally answer like, who cares? Like, how'd he get the Millennium Falcon? He won it in a card game. The end.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just rolling the dice on James Earl Jones still being alive. Like, we got to get one Mufasa movie out of this guy.
Yeah, but again, I'm mocking it now. It will make $1 billion.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it will.
It definitely will. Yeah. So, yeah, there's very little meat on the Lion King 2 history, Jim Matt. That's all I'm saying. And I had to pull together every little tiny scrap. But here's what I found out. So what I found out was apparently in the press, Disney was considering a direct-to-video Lion King sequel before the movie even came out.
Wow.
In like article write-ups about like VHS is a huge hit for Disney, there are people from Disney saying, yes, Lion King is coming to theaters this summer. We're already thinking about a Lion King sequel for the home video market.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the pre-orders are like Jafar was coming. Like Jafar was huge, like already on its way. And as I showed in the when we did the Mortal Kombat horrible VHS movie, that in the ads for it, in their promotions for it, like just like Return of Jafar, Mortal Kombat has like it. Return of Jafar changed everything.
Yeah, that was like May of 94, and Lion King is like June or July of 94.
Yeah.
So it's all happening at the same time for Disney. So yeah, Lion King summer of 94. January of 95 is when Disney announces direct-to-video sequels for both Return of Jafar and The Lion King. So January of 95 is when this is announced. It has not come out until over 3 years later.
Wow, that is a long time.
Yeah.
Boy.
And it sounds like Lion King 2 was supposed to come out before Aladdin and the King of Thieves. It was supposed to come out no later than holiday of 95. So there must be so many versions of this movie that were in production. I could not find any evidence of that at all. But the amount of names attached to it in terms of like screenwriting at the end, that tells me like there are people attached to this who just had written a version of this before, and some of the content remained in the final version.
Yeah, man. That, I mean, to miss that many Christmases for such a giant moneymaker like that, that tells me problems happened there for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, especially as this market is exploding. Return of Jafar, huge hit for 94 for Disney. There is no 1995 direct-to-video movie.
Right, yeah.
I guess Goofy Movie is their Disney Toon feature, but that's a movie theater experience. It's not just being sold to you on VHS.
Yeah, well, that only, and as we learned in our Goofy Movie history, like they kind of put it there as a stopgap. They're like, well, crap, we don't have the real movie studio.
Right.
We only have the Disney Toon one ready for there. Well, let's put it out. But then, you know, it went on to be like a VHS favorite of tons of kids, even though it was not a giant success. Yeah.
But yeah, Aladdin and the King of Thieves obviously came out first, but not until August of 96. So not the before 96 idea they had for either of these movies.
Man, yeah. If they were both greenlit at the same time, that could hit it so much earlier. Like, yeah, problems must have happened.
But despite the big gap between Lion King 1 and 2, one thing arrives to fill the gap for quite a few years, and that is the Timon and Pumbaa Disney Afternoon TV series. Debuts in fall of 95, runs for a staggering 85 episodes.
Whoa.
Through 1999.
Wow, that's so long. Every like kids are graduating high school who had seen Lion King in theaters.
I didn't know it lasted that long. And guess what? It's all on Disney Plus.
All wow, yeah. Man. Can't watch the fucking Buzz Lightyear show, but
nope.
You watch that.
You can't watch the Aladdin show either. But
yeah, what the hell?
It surprised me to find this on Disney Plus. I was like, it's not going to be on there, right? No, it is there. The funny thing is, Nathan Lane voices Timon in 10 episodes. So either he signed on and then was like, this is too much work, I'm out of here. Or he signed on for 10 and that was it, because the voices in which he voices Timon, the episodes in which he voices Timon, are sort of spread throughout the initial run to kind of fool you into thinking this is him the whole time, right?
Yeah. Oh, I bet I would bet he gave them a number and then they said, we can afford 10 of those.
Like, now listen, I only have time for 10 or whatever, however you do a Nathan Lane impression.
Yeah, no. And then after he did those 10, they were like, well, technically we can promote this as him being in this show. So we'll just put out those 10 and maybe those were the 10 they could put on VHS to sell to kids. Like these are the real ones, but
it's an odd show. I mean, I assume some of it's fun and good and there's some good animation throughout, but it's weird because Timon and Pumbaa have to act alone. And then they meet all these new characters and go to different locations. It's very strange.
Right, yeah. They have to leave the Serengeti a lot in it, don't they, I think.
They really do, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I can see why it was so successful. Like, this is, they got that show in the post-Ren and Stimpy world. They are post-Ren and Stimpy characters. So a show of the little guy in the fart machine. Like, I mean, again, that's the sign of they made 65 of everything. But if you go more than 65, then that shows that an executive says, this does so well, let's give more money to continuing this instead of just starting a brand new thing.
It's nuts to me that there were new episodes of this in 1999.
Yes. How could you possibly be working on that in 1999 and think like you're on the A show?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
So, back to Lion King 2. So it doesn't come out before 96. In mid-96, the movie's rescheduled to be released in early 97, and that doesn't happen. So again, I couldn't find this. There have to be like at least three or four versions of this movie in production, or at least scripts being worked on, because I bet they're trying to crack this nut for these three years. Like, what is this movie going to be about? It's got to be a big hit. We can't blow this.
Well, because as we talked about in the Lion King 1, like, they didn't know what they wanted it to be. Like, it went through like three different directors. The Hamlet thing, it almost got canceled if they didn't sell Eisner and Katzenberg on the Hamlet idea in the last ditch pitch that of reclaimed stuff from the eventual directors of it, it would have just been canceled. So when you have a story that already like barely became a movie, you like you said in a similar way, there's little story left to continue with or explore with after after the happily ever after of this
which
one.
Is why they have to make a bunch of crap up. That annoys me. We'll talk about it soon. But yeah, so this movie's being worked on for a long time, and again, very little documentation. They respect this movie more than other direct-to-video stuff. They gave it its own DVD release like twice.
Oh.
There's a special edition for this, but you know what? No commentary. When some of these things have commentary, Lady and the Tramp 2 has a commentary track.
What?
Lion King 2 does not.
That is shocking to me, man.
So no commentary, no oral history, no interviews dedicated solely to this. It comes up a few times in interviews with people who worked on it, but the one interview I found is an interview with a guy who worked on a bunch of Balto movies, and the guy was just so focused on Balto that this movie came up once.
That's the annoying thing. Whenever I find somebody who worked on Transformers and also a thing we're covering, every interview is just all Transformers. I'm like, yeah, I know you Transformers fans, you find the old writers, but I'd like you to have something about not Transformers.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Although I don't think Balto's knocking things out of the conversation any other place.
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah, you have to be a very specific, to be a Balto super fan of all other things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, these are furry webpages I was going furries love Lion King 2, and they have a lot of documentation. So thank you to all you furries out there, because you are the people doing the work for me.
Thank you.
On this stuff. But the one thing I found was, at a certain point in his life, the director of this movie, Daryl Rooney, was answering questions about it on his Facebook page. Oh. So this page I went to had like screen caps of his answers to things.
Oh,
and that
nice.
That's all I could get.
Wow, man. All from one guy's old Facebook post. That's crazy, man.
So this is me making a lot of very little information. So going back to Lion King 2, based on interviews about other things at the time, you could find out maybe what this movie could have been. So in an interview with Frasier's Jane Leaves, about Frasier, I think, we find out that she was originally cast as Binti, Zazu's girlfriend. So in some version of this, Zazu has a girlfriend, obviously cut.
Man, you know, I would have loved that. Like Zazu, Jane Leaves as a fussy British macaw, I guess, or
Hornbill.
Hornbill, yes, of course.
So in a Nash Bridges focused interview, Cheech Marin is like, yeah, I'm back as Banzai, everyone's favorite hyena. So at some point, hyenas were in this movie.
You know what? They're not dead at the end.
No.
They fed off of Scar. They're not dead. They should, at the very least, maybe they couldn't get back, you know, Whoopi, but if Cheech Marin's up for it, get those guys back.
They get a sound like for Whoopi, and Ed is Jim Cummings.
Yeah, who he's in this movie, so he'd have done it, yeah.
And at some point, it was reported that Jennifer Aniston was pegged to play adult Kiara, but then Sarah Jessica Parker got the role, because obviously at the time, she was a Matthew Broderick's wife. But, you know, in the end, Neve Campbell plays adult Kiara. I don't know what happened to Parker, but Neve Campbell, we'll talk more about her later, very hot at the time in terms of, you know, Scream and Wild Things. Her star is rising in the late 90s.
I love her. She was I'm a Scream super fan. I love, and by that I mean I watched Scream 1 through 3 and I haven't watched any more Screams after that, but I'm going to watch this new Scream. But,
you know, as of this recording, it comes out, I think, today.
No, all right. Well, I'm going to give it a watch. But I think it's good. It wasn't, somebody had to have said, wait, why is Matthew Broderick's wife playing his daughter in this movie? That's weird.
Eisner stepped in to stamp out the incest, and we'll talk more about that later.
Oh, okay.
He's like, you know what? This movie has too much incest. Let's get rid of some of it.
Man, it's furries and incest?
Yeah.
This has too much of the Pornhub search bar here.
So a lot of my sources were just people writing up, you know, oh, Disney's announcing this movie, and like a Disney person will talk about it. In the press, you see their messaging. They're not saying, yes, our other things we put out were inferior, but the idea, the intent behind these messages are, and the interviews are, we are doing double the work on this one. We're going to really make this one special. So they were at least like tacitly acknowledging people understand these direct-to-video things are cynical, cheap cash-ins. Their messaging is, this is not one of them.
Man, that's a tough... I don't envy the PR person, Flack, who has to say that, like, say that this looks better than the other ones without admitting that the other ones look like shit by comparison. But I mean, I'm glad they understood that that is a selling point of this, of like, guys, it's not cheap looking. We promise. We spent real money on this.
And also Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up in their video pick of the week review. And I have about a minute of it here.
Oh, boy.
So only a marginal thumbs up for me.
Marginal for me, too. And I think you used the right word in your intro to this review when you said it was satisfactory.
Yeah.
It's more or less what you are hoping for or expecting as a made-for-video sequel to The Lion King. It's not at the level of the theatrical releases that Disney does. But on the other hand, if you're interested in what happened to the characters, you want to see kind of a Romeo and Juliet scenario played out in the Serengeti, then it's fun on that level.
But you know what I'm talking about with the songs?
Yeah.
You couldn't I couldn't hum one from the picture.
Nope. And as we know, people are still humming Hakuna Matata. Yeah.
They're probably, I don't know if they're humming.
A name on every list.
I think actually, if they know the song, they remember the lyric.
Okay.
It's a nice, Gene Siskel getting in a few digs before he dies in like 4 months.
Oh man. That's, boy, he had such little precious time left. Why'd he do it? I mean, he thought he'd survive. That's why.
Yeah. But marginal thumbs up. And then I went back to watch their Lion King 1 review, and they were kind of lukewarm on that movie too.
I remember that. Yeah. I would bet maybe by 98 he's not saying it anymore. For a time, every Siskel take, his side of it would be like, you know, The Little Mermaid, why isn't it as good as that? Like, that was his bar, that was his gold standard for everything.
That was his talking point. And one thing I noticed in reading reviews of the time is that I think people were just trained to think these things always looked worse. And they were being really harsh to the animation, which I think at times reaches the heights of feature animation. Like, this looks to me as good as a Goofy movie and sometimes better. And I consider that like quality Disney feature animation, especially in terms of character animation. Like, Entertainment Weekly's review called the animation flat and crude.
What?
Which is crazy to me. That is crazy to me.
That's also like, the animation in this looks like, it's not Disney's top theatrical level, but it is as good as 2D animation was looking from pretty much any other theatrical studio.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Giant had to work really hard to look a little better than Lion King 2 does in its 2D animation.
This looks better than like Cats Don't Dance.
And
other non-Disney features.
Yeah. In at least style, like, you know, Cats Don't Dance has more style and interest to it. I'd rather watch it, but
me too.
Yeah. But hey, maybe we will. Someday.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
So people just dumping on the animation quality, and it's just like a lot of people who aren't used to writing about animation, but just like, here's my chance to be a little stinker.
Yeah. I know. I hate that. They're like, it's the one cartoon they watch a year, and they're like, it's as we've mocked many times. If a person is asked to review an anime movie and the only thing they've seen is like Spirited Away, they're just like, it's not like Spirited Away.
Well, as like Simpsons fans who frankly know too much, it's always annoying when people are like, oh, Klasky Chupa, their episodes were the worst looking.
Yes.
And it was awful. Not people usually don't know they did up through season 3, and season 3 is a great looking season for the show.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. No, I mean, hey, that's the pain of being the expert, I suppose. Yeah.
Yes. Our lives are truly hell. So here is like all the little scraps I pulled together. So obviously Lion King is kind of loosely based on Hamlet. This is kind of loosely based on Romeo and Juliet, at least like the central idea, where it's not close at all. It's just like star-crossed lovers from two warring families. Although in this movie, you see more of the adult perspective, and it doesn't end with like a double suicide.
Yes. Yeah. No, no death. It's the happy, I guess too, in just like with how they took Hamlet, they're like, well, obviously Hamlet's not going to die at the end of our thing. Spoilers for Hamlet, everybody. But Simba does not die after being poisoned in his big fight.
So. I was going to get around to watching that.
I thought this tragedy would end in death of the main character.
But I mean, it's 98. Go back. You can watch the 96 Romeo and Juliet if you really want to see the contemporary version of this story. So here's when we get to the fun incest conversation.
Oh,
so yeah, I think you're totally right, Henry. They made it so that Sarah Jessica Parker was not the daughter of her husband. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of weird energy there.
Yeah.
Also, Kovu intended to be Scar's son. Michael Eisner heard about this about halfway through production and was like, absolutely not. These are not going to be kissing cousins, Kiara and Kovu.
Yeah, I was curious, like, because in design, he looks like Scar's son. Like, he is fully Scar's son. But they don't say it, like, but if they did, then yes, they'd be cousins, which, like, in the animal world, they cousins fuck all the time. Like,
yeah.
If a brother is like, then incest is, it sounds like I'm being a pro-incest person, but I'm just saying it would at least be realistic to a group of lions that they would have, be incestuous.
This is now a pro-incest podcast.
No,
while I was watching the movie casually, I didn't even, like, it didn't occur to me because, you know, these are animals. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why isn't Khovu Scar's son? Why do they point out three times he's not his son? I don't understand. And then reading this, I'm like, oh, yeah, duh.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
then he'd be related to Kiara, but also I don't care that much.
I mean, nobody would really care. Though then again, that would be the entirety of Disney content in the aughts and early tens were like, did you know this Disney film was actually pretty fucked up when you look at it? That
yeah.
would have just been another one for the list.
This would be know? Like pay dirt for the nostalgia critic if they actually had the incest plot in this.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I would bet if we pulled up the nostalgia critic video anyway, he'd still make the jokes and be like, mm-hmm. but it basically is incest, and I think the jokes were a little like this.
And then he'd mime shooting himself.
Yep.
It's, yeah. all, it's all good jokes. All funny stuff.
the hilarious.
So, yeah, no incest in the movie. And so even though Khovu's lack of relation to Scar is directly pointed out, there's lots of fan theories online as to where Nuka and Vitani come from. The movie is very, very vague about this. The Wikipedia summary of the movie is like, well, yeah, Nuka and Vitani are the children of Scar and Zira, right? Well, the movie, I don't think, ever comes out and says that. Mm-hmm. And there are all these fan theories online as to where Nuka and Vitani came from. In the movie, Zira is claimed to be a follower of Scar, but not like his mate.
Right, yeah.
But it's just, they make it so vague.
But everything about her character is like she's a Lady Macbeth type, or she's also just like pining for the man she lost, you know? But I also read, you know, Scar is so gay that he
yeah.
would, I could also see her as like his old fag hag who is sad he's dead now.
And he's allowed
know?
To say that, by
yes,
the way.
Yeah, but
yeah. But yeah, I feel like one of the songs was written before Khovu stopped being related to Kiara, because in the song My Lullaby or whatever it's called, we'll talk more about it when we get to the movie section, but Zira calls Khovu my son.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that feels like it. At some point, they made the big change, but they couldn't sand off every part of the machine that draws back to that. So they just have to go. I mean, you know, it's like she adopted him.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. But. Like, it's funny that the idea of adoption is in this movie, where it's just like, oh yeah, that's not Scar's son. He just adopted him. It's like, what? Do lions do this?
He did, because his hair looks so similar.
Yeah, it's like you look like me.
Yeah.
So speaking of fan theories, so there's lots of fan theories online again. Thank you, furries. People in the Lion King fan community want to know, where is Copa? Because Copa is introduced as Simba and Nala's son in six books written after the I think these books actually came out before the movie came out, but in 1994 there were six books that came out based on the Lion King, future adventures of Simba and whatnot. And in these books they have a son named Copa, who is that's a different continuity entirely.
Wow.
But Copa does not exist.
I see, because as everyone knows, the circle of life completes in Lion King, so it ends with Simba and Nala having a child, and so they don't gender the kid, they don't say it's not, and it's the obvious place to pick up the story with, like, okay, let's start back up with the kid that they had in that. And it's so funny that, and for a time before they knew what this story was going to be with him having a daughter, they're like, well, yeah, it's his son, and we'll just write a whole bunch of stories about Simba's new kid, and he can be the new little baby character that kids will buy toys of. You
it's
know?
Funny that even by the mid-90s, Disney, they honestly should have had more control over their brand, because I was reading, this could be apocryphal, but the writer of those kids' books didn't have, like, the entire Lion King script. I don't think they had the ending yet, but he was like, yeah, I guess these characters have kids. Here's the kids' adventure. And he just was able to do that, and Disney allowed that to be published. You know,
yeah, that does feel like the tail end of that being allowed, like that they would have much tighter control on that kind of thing with their stories. So I feel for these kids who grew up with a couple years of stories about this Copa kid, and then he's just gone. Like, yeah.
So... Copa does not exist, but Simba and Nala would have a son. So the movie,
right.
The series, The Lion Guard, which ran from 2015 to 2018, introduces Kiara's little brother, Keon, as the main character, So this adheres very closely to the Lion King 2 continuity. I did not know they were so slavish to the world set up by this Lion King sequel, but the third season takes place during the Lion King 2 second act, while the final two episodes take place after The Lion King 2.
Wow, I didn't know it was that, like, so they have a shipping in time jump even yeah. in that. That's crazy.
And most of the series takes place within the time gap before the grow-ups happens.
Wow, I didn't know that. I see, I only know Lion Guard for the farting skunk
We've all seen
around.
It. I shared it with Nina. Yes. She did not appreciate that. But yeah, I believe it takes place before Kiara grows up, so she is, like, a cub with this new baby cub Keon as the main character.
So then assume in this show that Keon's just off screen or having adventures. So I guess Lion Guard answers where that Keon guy is, since you would think that in all the stuff that happens in this movie, Simba would really want his son around as well.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see this series had took place. It actually was produced like before the CGI movie, and it's just weird it happened this late. But I was looking at it on Disney Plus and looking at episode descriptions. This is Disney basically doing their kind of airbendery version of The Lion King, where it's like an epic saga across three acts about a chosen one,
right.
All this stuff.
There's more magic in it. That was one other thing I saw from it, that it takes the magic even farther than the first couple movies do.
It definitely does. And you know, that's all on Disney Plus if you want to see it. Now, before I move on to the talent of the movie, I want to get one thing out of the way. I feel like this movie is a sequel to a version of The Lion King 1 that does not exist, because it seems to be answering a question that the first movie never posed, which is, what happened to all of Scar's followers? Go back to The Lion King 1, Scar acting alone with hyenas. There were no acolytes. There was no lion army. It's really hard for me to get over that giant plot hole that these characters were just off screen, you know, while Scar was doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I wish they could have found a more creative way around this, because you have to really ignore that. And throughout the entire movie, it bothers me.
Well, you know, we talked about the racial metaphor that were at work in the first movie of, like, the only evil lion is Scar, and he invites in the lesser people from across the border in the hyenas who take over and destroy the place. And so I can see why they maybe that's why they were like, you know what, no more hyenas. Like, let's not have stuff about how dirty and awful the hyenas are. You know, if they could go back in time, maybe they would have had, like, oh, an evil lioness likes him or whatever. But yeah, in The Lion King, all the lionesses hate him. Like, the other lions are like, hey, you're a shitty ruler. We're running out of food. We are tired of hunting for you. And he hates them back. He's like, then keep looking. Like,
yeah.
Get out of here.
There are no, I mean, again, you have to pretend this is all happening off screen, but it's a giant ass pull. And I saw this once in 98, and going back to it, I was like, there was something about this movie that really bothered me that didn't work, and that was it. And I will try to not bring it up that much throughout this podcast, but there are so many things they bring up where I'm like, well, that didn't happen, or you're making this up. This never happened.
You know, in Star Wars stuff, and I'm talking about the post-movie stuff from my childhood, they would just make up, like, oh, this is a former Imperial officer who just happened to not be there at the Death Star. They had to make up these characters who were like, oh, this was a high-level officer, but also for some reason he wasn't there at the big final battle at the Death Star. For some reason.
Yeah.
Like, they constantly have to make up that type of dude.
I will say, to their credit, by doing this ass pull, they are able to make adult Simba a compelling character, because, you know, go back to our podcast about that first movie. I think adult Simba sucks. He's not interesting.
No.
He's just, like, so bland. But in this one, he's got to get over his pride. Get it, Simba's pride.
Yeah. No, his arc in the first movie is just, can you come back home and take over your dad's dealership? The dealership's in a really bad spot, and it needs you to take it back over.
And, like, again, that thing in the movie about the misunderstanding that I never bought either.
Yes, yeah. And this actually gives him as an adult something to do. And also it gets him, you know, I think it does follow at least a idea from the first movie, which is he seems to think, like, oh, it's great to be king, dad. That's what he underestimates how hard it is to be king. Now that you finally have to see him actually be king, not earn the right to be king again, but be the king again, now he gets to see how hard it is to be a leader. Like, that gives you some dramatic stuff to work with.
So yeah, again, I will try not to hammer that point too hard throughout the podcast, but please tell me if I'm being irritating, because I'm trying to get over it. I'm working through therapy with this movie, and I did mostly enjoy it. So let's talk about who made the movie. So first of all, in terms of animation, the pre-production work happened via Walt Disney Feature Animation in Burbank. So Feature Animation is like half involved with
this. Okay, that's a good, I mean, if that's your starting point, like you're getting... The plans for the house are made by the top house builders. That's a good way to start.
Yes. Yeah. And I was wondering, like, God, who animated this movie? Because I just love how well the characters move and just how good it looks and how it's like, it's hitting that Feature Animation quality line for me most of the time. It's the Australian division. It's okay. Walt Disney Television Animation Australia. And they're really showing off what they can do with more money. I mean, if you go back to 2019, go back to our Bonkers episode.
Right, yeah.
Look at what they did with a Bonkers episode and a TV budget. Like, every character is just moving so expertly. There are so many, like, specific poses and the way they're hitting dialogue in certain ways. And I think that Goof Troop we did was Australia as well?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, it was the rare times where most of the time on Disney TV, if it wasn't Japan, it was not my... I was like, I wish it was the Japan guys doing it. Those top-level Aussie productions, those were the ones where I was like, yeah, Australia, all right. Like, yeah, there's something about the way, especially the Bonk Man, the way he would just, like, screw into the camera, like, his little, like, mouth moves. They had some of the best, like, mouth and lip sync in the shows on Australia episodes.
Their TV work was amazing, so I'm not surprised they were chosen for this. And maybe they had to wait for them to be available to make this movie because they were so busy with the TV production. So this probably took them off of TV shows for, like, a couple of years.
Maybe they tried to hand it to other studios, like, shit, this doesn't look as good. Let's just wait for the Aussies to keep getting more free time for this.
And Japan was busy with other productions too.
Yeah,
so
as we said, they were pooing it up.
They were the poo experts. The Australian branch of Disney Animation, this will be their last international studio to close. And they were even assigned a non-video feature with 2002's Return to Neverland. So they actually made a feature for Disney. I saw that movie in theaters because I was dating a woman who liked Peter Pan a lot.
I remember when that got released in theaters, people were like, well, wait, is this better? Does it mean that this is better than most of the direct-to-video stuff? Or does it mean that Disney's theatrical standards have lowered so much that they're putting it in theaters?
You know? I watched a bit of it on Disney Plus just to go back and see what it looks like. It looks really good.
Okay.
So they worked really hard on this, and I think they're being groomed to be a possible, like, satellite feature studio.
Well, then after that movie, then the Tinkerbell video series became, like, some of the biggest shit that Disney had. Yeah.
I think that might have been their last Disney Toon production. Was it, like, the third Tinkerbell movie or something?
I see,
like, in 2018? So they closed the studio with a Tinkerbell movie, I'm pretty sure.
That's sad.
So who directed this movie? The movie directed by Daryl Rooney, who had already been at Disney for 20 years at this point.
Whoa.
He joined the company in 1978, and he first worked as a visual effects artist on Tron.
Wow, okay, so he's from that same Dark Days era of guys. Mm-hmm. So much of it goes back to that late 70s, early 80s crew in these things. They either stuck around Disney and eventually got it put in charge of stuff like this, or they left and got put in charge of big things outside of Disney. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he was a Brad Bird CalArts friend based on what he worked on, many things with Brad Bird, including before this, Animal Olympics.
Oh, right.
So if you like furry things, this bizarre animated movie about the Olympics with sexy animals, sexy muscular animals.
Because they all have to be Olympians, so they're as hot as they possibly can be. Yeah.
So he worked on that with other future legends like Brad Bird and Roger Allers. Allers, of course, co-director of The Lion King.
Right. Yeah. Animal Olympics is an interesting thing. I don't think it's a good... whatever I've watched of it has never compelled me to watch the whole thing. But I bet if I were to, I would at least... I bet there's at least a ton of great character animation to appreciate.
And it's a good test to see if you are a furry.
Yes.
Like, is this making me horny?
I've told you before, so many of the gay guys I follow, like gay pals I follow on Twitter, they keep having these furry... They show furry stuff. I'm like, am I the only non-furry gay I know?
You need to get with the program, Henry.
I really should, yeah.
So, yeah, Rooney worked with Bird on other stuff. He was a layout artist on the Family Dog short.
Okay.
And he helped Brad Bird make that short about the spirit.
Oh,
which we talked about on the Iron Giant podcast.
That was amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
So he is a fan of Bird. So his first credit as director was right before this. Now, this is real fun. in the 90s, Disney kept making shorts, but you couldn't really see them anywhere. They're like at animation festivals. Now when there's a short, it's before a Pixar movie or before a Disney movie. Like the famous like John Henry short that won an Oscar. Like, where do you see that?
Right. Yeah. I remember when they packaged all those and put them on like a Blu-ray finally. That's when I bought it. And now they have an entire shorts category on Disney Plus.
But for a long time, it was really hard to see these shorts, including this one. There was a 1997 short that was an update on The Three Little Pigs. So The Three Little Pigs was basically one of Disney's first huge hits. That Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf was like a hit record that they sold.
Yes, yeah. For a time, the pigs were bigger than Mickey Mouse. Like, they were that big. Like,
I don't get it.
No, I don't.
I don't get it.
Like, the reason that play is called Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is because of that song. It was a parody of the
Who's song.
Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf.
Yeah. It's weird to have to explain that title because it's only funny if you're alive in 1938 or whatever, whenever you wrote that play. But so this 97 short that Rooney directed, his first directorial gig, it is a parody of the real world in which the three little pigs are now living with the Big Bad Wolf, who is now a vegan, voiced by Harvey Fierstein.
What?
Yes.
Wow. I want to see this now. I've never heard of this.
It's not on Disney Plus, and you'll never guess who wrote this short.
No, I can't. Who?
Frank Conniff.
What?
TV's Frank.
TV Frank?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
With that timeline, then, it's like he quit the show and then went and wrote that for Disney.
Like immediately, because he was gone by like 96, 95, 96.
You know, that totally makes sense because he also worked the Funniest Home Video stuff was a Disney production. That was the ABC production.
Yeah, Buena Vista.
He was in the Disney family.
And he worked on Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
That's
so
right.
Doing all this Disney stuff. If you're not a Mystery Science Theater fan, this means nothing to you, but TV's Frank is the sidekick on Mystery Science Theater.
We all love Frank. Yeah. He's a great.
So this is the first feature Darryl Rooney directed. He also directed Lady and the Tramp 2 and Mulan 2 as well. So okay, lesser than this.
He's a real number two guy, this guy.
He's part of the number twos. And so for the past decade, he's been at Sony. Working as a storyboard artist and a story artist on every Hotel Transylvania movie, including Surf's Up 2. And I know there is a new Hotel Transylvania movie coming out.
Yes, yeah. This is a quick aside, but like I'm starting to think I should be a Hotel Transylvania watcher because like the first three were all directed by Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah.
And also like Rebecca Sugar worked on the first movie too.
Really?
And I've heard only good stuff about it. And now this new one, this fourth one that's coming out, Tartakovsky's not working on it. One of the co-directors is top classic SpongeBob dude Derek Dryman.
He's
a co-director on it. Like,
okay.
I didn't want to watch it because I was like, it came out when seeing something that featured Adam Sandler was the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
So I ignored that.
You know, when it came out, there was a real glut of CGI kids horror movies because it was this. It was Paranorman and it was Frankenweenie, all like in the same 18-month period.
Yeah. No, and like also Monster House was around the same time too. Yeah, there was so much of it. And I think I should give him another shot. Maybe I gotta at least think the animation on display looks great, even if it probably has all the same lame jokes that's in all of those types of movies.
I think Sony could be doing better than Pixar at this point.
Right now, I guess, you know, they're making a big push for Mitchell and the Machines at the Oscars. Like, I'm seeing so many interviews. Cool. I just mentioned them. Rebecca Sugar just hosted a panel about Mitchell's versus the Machines, talking about the making of it, including that it has like an LGBTQ lead character and how big and how Disney would never fucking do that in one of their movies. They fucking canceled the gay cartoon that Blue Sky was making, the Nimona one.
Hey, you got that gay cop in Onward, right?
They always have to be a fucking cop. Yes. I am so sick of seeing gay cops and stuff. It makes me
speaking
so
of
mad.
Movies that caused COVID to happen.
Yes, and I saw that damn movie, man.
You're part of the problem. Yeah. This movie, though, Lion King 2, written by Flip Cobler and Cindy Marcus, a husband and wife writing team. Isn't that sweet?
That is cute.
And also additional material from 7 other writers. So I have to assume those are other scripts that were filtered into this.
I mean, The Lion King also had 800 different writers and reworked scripts for like 4 years. So it's just continuing the tradition.
It's just part of the process. Yeah. So they're married. So a fun story I read about them is that they wrote the animated version of the Pirates of the Caribbean movie before it was changed to live action.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, I didn't know it got that far as being an animated one. You just watched that for the first time recently.
Yes. You know what? It's probably the best one, but it's still 45 minutes too long.
Everything, you know, it was ahead of the curve of movies being too long. Now every movie's too long.
It's hard to keep track of which boat people are on movie.
Oh, man. That was the third movie. That was so hard. Like, people have to, and it's all in a gray twister, and they have to like jump between like 15 different boats throughout the whole end of the movie. It's so confusing.
We need like Papa Video to come back and help us out with some of these movies. So, Flip Cobbler and Sandy Marcus, their first credit is a 1994 episode of Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
And soon after that, they fell into the Disney direct-to-video sequel factory pretty quickly. So together they wrote Beauty and the Beast and Enchanted Christmas, which came before this. Then they wrote Pocahontas 2, Lady and the Tramp 2, and Hunchback 2. So they were just the go-to team to figure these movies out.
Very dependable. Like, hey, nice work if you can get it. Like, that probably paid them a good amount of money. I would bet their residuals weren't as good as if these had been theatrical films.
No, but something tells me they're living high on the hog off of these because they've worked very sporadically after this. Like, they weren't really doing a whole lot. But on IMDb, I see them attached to certain things in post-production, but they seem to be like just creative projects that are small. They're working on with people they know.
Okay.
And one very odd thing I found out about them is that they wrote a 2019 live-action Powerpuff Girls fan film.
Fan film.
You can watch it all on YouTube. It's called The Long Way Back. It's very strange, but I don't know why they did this, but they're writing fan films.
That is very strange. I think I remember that only coming up in conversation of the proposed live action real show that they were going to do.
Yeah.
And people said, this fan film's way better than this. What this shit sounds like.
I just was skimming through it. It looks like a very low budget fan film, but still pretty competently done. But it's 20 minutes. It's on YouTube officially if you want to see it. But they just kind of do what they want now, and they seem to be doing okay.
That's cool. Good for them.